always told me to be a success instead.
They deny your father's heritage.
They tried to. Dad's scholarship came through a program designed especially to help minority groups, such as Native Americans. And the history texts he's written have sold to universities all around the U.S., mainly because they present American history from the minority viewpoint. They were never active in Indian affairs, and neither was I. If it weren't for my grandfather, I'd be more white than you are. He taught me to understand my heritage, to accept it without hating anybody.
But Molitor, she hates me.
Not you, Mikhail. She hates the idea of Russians. She doesn't see you as an individual. In her eyes, you're part of an inhuman system that hanged her grandfather and forced her grandmother to run away from her native land.
Voznesensky muttered, "That is not much help."
"Just like people who don't see individuals among the Indians, or even tribes," Jamie went on. "There's a lot of whites who still see the Indian instead of individual men and women. They don't understand that some people want to live in their own way and don't want to become white."
"And you? How do you want to live?"
Jamie no longer had to think it over. "I'm the descendant of Indians. My skin is darker than yours. But if you take our brains out of our skulls, Mikhail, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between them. That's where we really live, in our minds. We were born on opposite sides of the world, and yet here we are together on a totally other planet. That's what's important, not what our ancestors did to one another, what we're doing now. That's the important thing."
Voznesensky nodded somberly. "Now you must give that little speech to Molitor."
Jamie nodded soberly. "Okay, maybe I will.
It won't do any good."
"Probably not," Jamie agreed. "But there's no harm trying."
"Perhaps."
A new thought struck Jamie. "Mikhail, is that why you decided to come out on this traverse with me, instead of letting Pete do it just to get away from Ilona?"
"Nonsense,"
spat the Russian with a vehemence that convinced Jamie he had hit on the truth. "Ilona's hurting him," Jamie realized. "She's really hurting the poor guy."
Dossier, M. A. Voznesensky. "Why can't you be reasonable like your brother?"
Mikhail Andreevich had heard that cry from his father all his life, it seemed. Nikolai was the older of the two boys, the paragon of the family. He studied hard at school and won excellent marks. He was quiet. His favorite pastime was reading books. His friends were few, but they were as studious and well-mannered as Nikolai himself. Mikhail, the second son, there was a younger daughter, sailed through school hardly even glancing at his textbooks. Somehow he got good grades. Not quite as good as his older brothers, of course, but good enough to send him to the engineering college. Instead of studying, Mikhail listened to music, imported American rock, mostly. The noise drove his father wild. Mikhail had lots of friends, girls as well as boys, and they all liked to listen to loud rock music and dress in blue jeans and leather jackets, like bikers. And he gambled. "The curse of the Russians," his father called it. His mother wept. Mikhail played cards with his friends and sometimes with older men who dressed well and had faces of stone. His parents feared the worst for him.
"You're turning your mother gray,"
his father shouted when Mikhail announced he was going to buy a motorbike. He had worked for 2 years in secret, spending his afternoons in a garage, helping the mechanic instead of attending classes. Somehow, he had still managed to pass his examinations at school. Even so, 2 years' wages were not enough to buy the handsome machine he coveted. Mikhail had risked every ruble on a card game, vowing that if he won, he would never gamble again. He won. Mainly because he had been willing to take greater risks and had more money to put up than the other gamblers that night. True to his self-imposed discipline, he never gambled again. He bought the bike over his father's objections and his mother's flowing tears. It did not matter to them that Mikhail could now drive from their apartment to his college classes without spending 2 hours a day on city buses. They only saw him zooming along the streets of Volgograd with pretty young girls shamelessly showing their legs as they rode behind Mikhail, clutching him tightly. His mother was already gray, and his father almost totally bald. The old man had been a civil servant, one of the numberless apparatchiks who had been pushed out of the government bureaucracy in the name of perestroika and forced to find another job. Briefly, he had worked as an administrator in one of the largest factories in Volgograd, but only briefly. He entered politics and soon was elected to a seat on the city council, where he settled down in comfortable anonymity for the remainder of his working life.
"Why can't you be reasonable like your brother?"
his father cried when Mikhail announced that he was going to take flying lessons. He had done well that school year, even winning academic honors now that he had given up the mechanics job. That was the summer Mikhail learned that he loved flying, and flying loved him. He was good at it. Very good. He took to the air as naturally as an eagle, his instructor told him. He was actually in the air on his first solo flight when his older brother was killed in a senseless accident. A drunken truck driver smashed into the city bus he was riding. 14 injured and 1 killed. Nikolai. Somehow his parents seemed to blame Mikhail for Nikolai's death. They raised no objection when he told them he had been accepted for cosmonaut training and would be leaving Volgograd. It was while he was in training that his mother quietly passed away in her sleep. When he went home for her funeral, his father and sister treated him so coldly that Mikhail never returned. Mikhail had not even been born when Yuri Gagarin made his epical first flight in orbit. Vaguely, from early childhood, he recalled seeing blurry television pictures of the Americans on the moon. All through the long years of growing up, he nursed the secret ambition of being the first man to set foot on Mars. He told no one of his dream, except once, when he was still a child, one dark autumn night while the first snow of the year gently sifted out of the sky to cover grimy old Volgograd with a clean coating of white. He spoke of it to his brother, half asleep in the bed next to his. "Mars," his brother said dreamily, drowsily. "I want to be the first man on Mars," Mikhail whispered. "The first, no less." Nikolai turned in his bed. "All right, little Mickey, you can be the first. I give you my permission. Now let me sleep." Mikhail smiled in the darkness, and when he dreamed about Mars. Sol 6, afternoon. They arrived at the edge of the canyons in the middle of that afternoon, exactly where Jamie had wanted, at the juncture of 3 broad fissures in the ground that reminded him of arroyos carved out of the desert by wildly rushing waters. But bigger, gigantic, like the Grand Canyon, except that there was no river down at their distant bottom. Jamie stood on the level ground where the 3 huge gullies joined together, and he could barely see the other side. Peering down into their depths, Jamie guessed the canyon floors must be more than a kilometer below him, perhaps a full mile down. Nothing but red-tinged rock, cracked and seamed by eons of heating in the sun and freezing every night. He felt suddenly small, insignificant, like an ant poised on the lip of a normal arroyo in New Mexico. For a dizzying moment, he was afraid he would topple over and fall in. The ground up here had fewer rocks strewn across it, as if it had been swept clean at one time and the rocks had only partially returned. Strange, Jamie thought. We're closer to the heavily cratered territory to the south, yet there's not as much impact debris here as farther north. He returned his attention to the canyons, feeling an excitement trembling within him that he had never known before. The first man to look into a Martian canyon. There might be 1 billion years of the planet's history written into those rocks down there. 2 billion, maybe 4. It was scary. The canyon wall was a nearly vertical drop. The thought of climbing down that rock wall thrilled him and frightened him at the same time. The bottom was so far down. Yet he could see it with absolute clarity. The thin air had not the faintest hint of haze in it. To his geologist's eye, it seemed clear that this labyrinth of canyons had been caused by a splintering of the ground, a gridwork of faults in the underlying rock that had weakened the crust, cracked it. When water had flowed here, however long ago it was, it had followed along those cracks, widening and deepening them. Or more likely, the permafrost beneath the crust melts from time to time and undermines the ground until it collapses. "Is that the way it happened?" Jamie asked the silent arroyos in a barely vocalized whisper. "How long ago was it?" The twisted gullies remained mute. The more Jamie stared into the deep ravines, the more he realized that there had been no great rushing flood here. Mars is a gentle world, he told himself. The ground doesn't quake.